welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Today I have a special guest, a person who thinks out of the box and has some great stories for us, Leanna Schlecht. Welcome to the show, Leanna.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here with you and your listeners.
Thank you so much. And, you know, we sat down, I think it was at G2E, and had coffee, and you were telling me some great stories. And one of the things you told me was that you come from a religious family, right?
I do. You know, I grew up in, it's a very rural area of Western Ohio, and my father was a full-time minister at two nearby churches. So we actually lived in the church, like parsonage, or the home there that the church owned. And so I spent a lot of time in church. I mean, if you've heard churches having pancake breakfast, they have spaghetti dinners. Another night it's a youth group, and then, you know, then you go to church for. And sometimes I attended two church services in one Sunday. So I did spend a lot of time in church, and it's kind of interesting now, you know, being in the gaming industry, and we'll kind of get into how that all happened later on. But, you know, we kind of joke sometimes that even at a family gathering of saying, okay, I grew up in the church, and now I'm trying to, like, find promotional strategies to get people to game $5 more or bring in an extra visit to the casino. And we kind of joke about it. it's interesting. And it's funny how life evolves. And, you know, and actually my father's still a part-time minister and, you know, lives in Wisconsin here and visits the casino. And, yeah, you know, and so, it was kind of an interesting, you know, time being, you know, really part of the church. I think now, I look back on that and how some of those, you know, it's just all about life skills and how some of those times that you maybe took for granted or some things that maybe didn't mean a lot at that time, they kind of instill of who you are and, you know, compassion for people and understanding people and accepting different types of people. It kind of molds who you are, and I think it's an interesting evolution.
Well, you grew up in a very community atmosphere. What do you remember from those days growing up? Leading, because I know you moved to the res when you were 9. Give us a little bit of a timeline about, you know, what the progression was. You know, what your memories are moving to the res and how that was at the time, and kind of some of the influences that started in that period.
Sure. Yeah, I did move to Lac des Flambeaux and lived on the reservation. My mom is a tribal member here in Lac des Flambeaux, and she wanted to move back to her community and be closer to her family. And so we did. We moved, and my dad got a job up here as a director of planning. He's still in that position with, you know. And we moved to the reservation. I have a home that's on tribal land, and it was a hard transition, I think. I mean, where I grew up in Ohio, it was all cornfields and farmers, and now I'm moving to a reservation, and people are, you know, I hadn't attended a powwow, and eventually I ended up dancing at the powwows eventually, but it's a very hard transition for someone moving across the country. I had to leave all my friends, everything I've ever known. But I also found it extremely rewarding to move to another community that's small, and you know everybody, and you know, and that's something I learned on the reservation very quickly is, hey, they're your cousin, or they're your second cousin, that's my nephew, and everyone, you feel like family. And so that's what helped the adjustment so much. And I still see people all the time where I'm like, well, we went to grade school together, or we were on the basketball team together. And I think it has a great sense of community on the reservation. It's something that I think is hard to replicate on, you know, non-reservation communities. It's interesting. I also think that I see communities and families help each other. And I would see that in Ohio with the farms and kind of helping each other work, but here it was different. I think people are there on the reservation. People are there for each other emotionally when they, you know, they're having a hard time. If you've ever been, you know, part of like a you know, a Native American gathering, a family gathering, and it's potlucks, and everybody pitching in and bringing food, or a funeral where all these different community members help out. And so you learn a sense of community and a sense of family on the reservation.
Yeah, and that's really helped you with your career, too. Give us a sense of what it was like living on the res, because the casino had just opened, right? So economically, how was it? Where were they at?
Well, when we moved here, the casino was actually in the building where my office is now, which was, I think, a grocery store before that, a small building downtown Lac des Flambeaux. And where our resort casino is right now, that was actually the grade school. That's where I was going to grade school. And, you know, everyone's sliding down the big hill and go, you know, where the lake is, and you'd go sledding during the winter. And, you know, and now that's the lakefront for the whole resort casino that was built, you know, over 20 years ago now. So I did see the transition of the old school torn down. The new school was built, and I think that was my sixth grade year of being in the new the new school that was built. And then they started building the casino. And, you know, I knew people in the community went to the casino. We had gone to eat there a bunch of times when I was younger. But with that whole development of the resort casino, I saw the community start to flourish some. And you start to see, okay, we have new development. We have some other economic development happening in the community. I think that kind of helped because so many people were coming here because of the new casino. So it was kind of trickling down and helping other areas within the community. And, you know, I think just growing up, seeing all of that transition, you have a different sense of, when I look at my position here at the property, it has a different sense of, I know I'm helping the community and the tribe that I grew up here. And I think it's hard to replicate that of, I think everybody wants to do, you'd hope everyone wants to do a good job at their position, but what do you have behind it really motivating you? And I think when people have that piece of ownership to their tribe or to their, you know, where they grew up at, I just think it adds just a little bit extra level on to what you're, when you really evaluate your job duties. And these are the dollars you're spending to hopefully create all of this revenue, but you really evaluate each dollar you're spending because you know where this community was and has been.
Right, exactly. As a kid, what did you think you would do as an adult?
Well, when we moved here to the reservation, it was my third grade year, and the teacher that I had was just so phenomenal at the public school, and I just really liked her. She really helped with the transition of moving and making things easier, helping me make friends. I was pretty quiet and shy. I know, hard to believe now, right? But I think that just really inspired me and kind of left such a great feeling that I said, I'm always going to be a teacher. I'm going to be a teacher. I'm going to work with kids. I said, I love kids. And I always thought that all the way through high school. And it's interesting, my first semester in college, though, ended up to be nursing. And that was only one semester. It wasn't for me. My second semester was accounting. And that was just not my thing either. It was interesting, and I use things I've learned in that, but I can't do that every day. I need a little bit more activity, a little bit more fun. And the first at the college is like, Leanna, all of these things you've already taken will be your electives, and you need accounting 1 and 2 and, you know, income tax and all those classes. Let's just try marketing. And I went into it that, you know, so here I am in my second year of college. Okay, I'm going marketing now. Let's try this. And you know what? It stuck. And so there we go. It wasn't really a whole life plan. It just happened.
Yeah, you just fell into it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your first job in gaming.
Well, my initial thought was I was actually going to be a stay-at-home mom. I had a son that was 6 months old. I had a college degree, and I was like, you know what? I'm doing great staying home with them. I'm enjoying it. But I saw a job posted for a banquet sales manager. And it kind of intrigued me to where it had some competitive feel of, hey, you have to go out and make all these new contacts, make all these new sales. I've always kind of thought I would like to work for the casino or tribe someday anyway. So I threw my application in and kind of my first real professional resume and said, I'm just going to go for the interview and just for experience. Well, I ended up getting called back for a second interview, came back to the second interview and was then offered the job after that. And I was like, oh boy, I was hoping to get a little experience interviewing. I was like, I have to find daycare and oh my, all this. I didn't, you know, like, so I decided to let's try it. The worst that happens, I decided to come back home and be a stay-at-home mom because that was what I thought I was enjoying. So I ended up jumping into that banquet sales full force, and I was really enjoying it. But I learned a lot about, I mean, when we look at, okay, we have to do payment authorizations, we have to do all the financial paperwork, you have to do a purchase order and get these numbers. I mean, just the basics of here's what happens in a business when you buy things or how you contact your guests. Here's the items that are confidential. It was kind of the foundation of learning how the business works. And I would say in meetings, I spent a lot of time observing people. How do people, you know, what are general responses people are giving if they're not agreeing with the subject or if they or if they want to move in another direction. And I kind of used, I think it was a couple of years I was in that position where I really just used it as a time to learn about how people, you know, what are their relationship building in business and how, and what's appropriate.
Right. You got to learn all that. Really great stories. How did you evolve from your first position in gaming? What was the key to you moving up?
Well, while I was the banquet sales manager, at that point, I got asked to transfer over to marketing coordinator, which ultimately I said, okay, I would love to be in the marketing department. I mean, that's what I was a kind of an ultimate goal anyway for me. So I accepted the transfer as marketing coordinator, and I worked my butt off, Tino. You know, it was all about, you know, long days, weekends, being, you know, there's times in, you know, or you're under intense pressure. It's just giving it your all. And I ran hard, you know, as a marketing coordinator. And I want to say that was, you know, a few, it's all a blur. I think this year is like my 16th year here at the property. And so I'm, you know, to kind of keep track of which segments were which, you know, at that point after marketing coordinator, I was promoted to marketing manager and oversaw our in-house agency. And, you know, I think part of the reason that you know, the key to moving up to different positions here was, you know, that I had the trust of my superiors that they knew they could count on me. I will work hard. And, you know, things don't always go as you plan, but you have to find a way to make it work and make it right. You know, and the other key thing I have found, you know, since I've started supervising other adults is they have to trust you. And, you know, and that's been so key is for me to have all of these great coworkers that they tell me little tidbits about their life. They may trust me to, you know, tell me certain things that are going on with them, you know, but then at other points I can turn around and say, you know, hey, how is this committee going that you're on? Or, you know, someone's on the Lions Club, or how is your mother doing? Or, and people, you know, when you create that relationship with people you work with, they're more willing to help you. I mean, if I need something last minute, they're going to be there and they're going to help you know, me succeed to help the tribe succeed because they know what the ultimate goal is of all of our jobs. But they also, we've created that relationship where I'm not by any means putting them down or feeling above them. And you know, you kind of hear the old, a lot of stories of saying, well, you treat the, you know, the person that's cleaning or dumping your garbage the same as you're treating the CEO. And I believe in it 100%. You know, I've seen where things can backfire on individuals when the staff does not trust them. And so, you know, I think some of the key to moving up was just being a, you know, a honest, kind person, and it goes a long way. You know, from there, I think it was probably 5 or 6 years ago now, we had the opening for the director of marketing. I had applied for that position, and you know, and it's a humbly, it's you're almost humbled to apply for it because, I mean, even before the banquet sales, manager to even jump back. While I was going to college, I was a marketing intern here. I mean, all the way from step one, marketing intern. And to get that, I was, so timid to even call the marketing director at the time and say, I'm interested in a marketing internship. And he didn't call back the first time. I'm sure he's extremely busy. But I called again then a couple of days later and said, okay, so, Leanna, I'm really interested in being a marketing intern. And, I got a call back. I got the, set up for have a meeting with them, go through. And it's kind of, we talk about it in our office a little bit, is always be nice to the marketing intern because in 15 years, she might be your boss. We have a few
That's
of the
so
staff
true.
that work here. There was a few staff that still work here that when I was an intern, they were helping me. And now they report to me, So we kind of always joke about, be nice to the intern because we usually get one each year. They might be our boss. We don't know. It's been an evolution, I guess. But, who really expects that they're going to end up in casino marketing? I mean, now I know they have different classes and colleges for casino management, but when I was going to school there, that they were just starting to begin having those fields even. Ours was more general business and marketing. So I mean, I didn't know was I going to do radio ad sales? Was I going to do, what were you going to, we're not near a huge city in Wisconsin. If I wanted to stay in this area, I wasn't sure what my options were. But once I it's almost like once my internship finished, I took some time off. It's like I jumped right back into the casino business, and I'm still here. I know a lot of people in the casino industry move around. I mean, a lot. And I've never really had an interest in doing that. And I know in some tribal and in some casinos, it's hard to maintain a position for a long time. I think we're pretty fortunate at our casino. We have some, a management team that's pretty, it's been stable, and they've, quite a few of them have been here 10 to 20 years. So it's a pretty unique environment for our property to be at. I know we talk to a lot of other properties when we go to events, and they've all been here 6 months, a year. And so I think it takes them, some time to all get on the same page where we all have that relationship built, and we can get projects done quickly. We can move forward on things. So yeah, it's been an interesting experience. I've really enjoyed it.
Cool. Great, great stuff. As a woman in gaming, what can you tell other women who are just starting out? What advice can you give them? And what kind of challenges will they face?
I always look at it. It's not always easy. I've experienced times where I've had people talk down to me or think maybe I couldn't do the same things that they could. And I've always just say, you know what, believe in yourself, believe in your ideas, and be willing to take some calculated risks. And I always say calculated risks. I know, I just think it's important to say, okay, you have to take those risks sometimes, but just do a little bit of due diligence and think about it first. I've been pretty fortunate to have some successful and really great women to look up to, I think, even in our organization. And they've taught me so much. Whether they've talked to me about how to balance, work life or how to move forward in certain challenging situations or coach you in certain situations, it's just been invaluable. Just not getting too sucked into negative things that are happening and just move forward. And it's hard to always say, well, stop worrying what people think. But it's true, you have to stop worrying what people think all the time or thinking that you're less. So just, believe in yourself and your ideas, and move forward. Because otherwise there's going to be no change in success in your life. You have to believe.
Yeah, and kind of like just let that flow off. Don't even think about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think there's So there's and it's hard to believe this. I know we all say it, but there's people out there that they may not want to see you succeed. And there's always going to be people like that. And I even tell my teenager this. There's going to be people that don't like you, and it's okay. And you can move on and continue on with your life. And not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to like your decisions either. And they might even tell you that, but you just move on and you do what you feel is right. And that's how, if you feel it's right and this is the direction you need to go, don't let other people stop you.
Right, exactly. It's exactly true. So give us an idea. I know you, when we sat down again, when we spoke, there was some things that you told me that were really fascinated about how you work, a little bit out of the box. Give us an idea of the scope of your work and how you go beyond the traditional role of a marketing director.
Sure. I mean, we're a mid-sized property. So as a marketing director, I don't think you can, or maybe even anywhere, grab a job description and say, here's only the items I do. Wouldn't that be ideal? I look at it as there's so many pieces of marketing, and I think people sometimes don't understand how intricate it is. It's like, oh, they do marketing. Well, it's coordinating radio and TV ads. It's booking entertainment, and that can be its own little special game, working with the entertainment industry. One creating the promotions that are successful and have create that incremental revenue for your property, even after you take out all the expenses. I think that's so important to say, well, look at all these people here. You can't just say, look at all these people at your casino, because you have to say, did you make money? And there's a difference of bringing people in and making money. And so I always try to look at, really dig into the numbers. And I work with finance because, our controller helps me because she's, obviously much, much better at saying, okay, this is really what's happening with the numbers. And so just listen to people and get the guidance of, here's how this promotion really worked. Let's take numbers from all the different venues. Let's pull in a lot of different KPIs and everything and pull these in and see what really worked. But I think it goes further to, what, and it's not even necessarily that far out of the box. It's knowing your frontline workers and how are they treating the guests. I mean, we have guests that walk through our door every single day. And their experience that they have, whether it's their first experience or their 100th experience, that's going to make or break our bottom line. And so you really have to know and focus on customer service. I mean, because I oversee the Players Club, the guest services, our host division, and knowing what is our average guest experiencing every day, and are we meeting their needs?
Right.
And so
Right,
there's a
right.
piece that goes, it's all about the customer service. It's so important. But then, 2 days later, I could be working at a community function, setting up tables. And so things are really complex, I feel like, as a marketing director, because you're pulled in so many different directions. I mean, on a Saturday, I could be working in entertainment and running to grab some last-minute food order for an entertainer. And by Monday, I'm in sitting in a council meeting doing a presentation, or Tuesday, then you're working with a finance person or booking, looking at promotion. So it just changes so quickly. You just have to be ready to multitask all of these items, that just, there's no official guideline to say, here's what a marketing director does, because it's so many different complex pieces. It's like little tidbits of them, each one of them every day.
Right, you have to be multi-talented. You have to be able to juggle a certain amount of things all the time. How do you manage all that? I mean, what, because those are all different disciplines, right? How do you manage doing all that stuff?
Well, and I think it's not done alone. I mean, I'm fortunate that we have a really great marketing team here. We have a great staff that respect each other, that work hard, but can also laugh and have fun. We have a really great great team here. And I think it's just not built overnight either. And then that goes back to the respect, respecting the people that work for you. They respect me, and really creating that honest relationship with them. And, you know, so it's like, if I have something come up last minute, I can turn to them and say, hey, I'm going to go to a meeting. Can you guys help me get this ready for when I come back? And all of a sudden they have an email to me. I forward it on, and things just go so much smoother when you have that mutual respect. So it's not all, I mean, I may be delegating it. I may be coordinating it, or I'm, you know, working with the team, but that's the only way it's ever going to work, is if you have a team with you, and not even behind you, but I say with you, working to make, all with the same vision, to make your property and your tribe successful.
Right. You know, being on the same page, right?
Absolutely. But I also think the other piece is to respect your employees' home and work balance. And it's so key, especially when we start talking about the younger demographic coming up. And, I know my teenager, you know, pushes carts, you know, at a grocery store and calls himself a slave. And I'm like, well, you gotta start somewhere. Yeah, absolutely. But he's learning key customer service skills right now, and I think that's important. And I said, you know, be nice to everybody there, because, and I give him the same example, that supervisor there might be the manager at your next job. You don't know. It's a
right.
small community. But, you know, I think that there's just life lessons and everything we do. So I look back at saying, okay, we need a work balance, work home balance. And so when I know there's Christmas concerts coming up at the area grade school, I want all the staff to be able to see their kid for 1 hour sing their songs. You know, can managers or other people cover the front line? So all of our, you know, we need our associates to go see their children sing for an hour. This is important. Or if I know that there's having a, you know, the kids are having a track meet or a talent show or whatever's going on, I just think it's important to accommodate your staff, even if that means the director or manager working for an hour, some, you know, printing cards or hanging up coats, whatever it may be. I just think it's important for people to have that balance.
Yeah, that's great. That's good stuff.
And I think it's going to come up more and more with the younger generation, because they want to be more social. That their social life is much more important than maybe their work commitment, or they want the best of both. And I think it's going to be an interesting transition over the next 10 years of people coming out of college and into the workforce, of how does social life or even social media fit into your new professional work life.
Right. How does it integrate?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting balancing act.
Yeah. What do you see as the most important things moving forward for tribal nations?
I think it's going to be very important for tribal nations to really have healthy communities. And I've seen a lot of steps taken, you know, going forward here, even in our own community, of having, you know, the 5K or 1K, you know, run walk events, promoting healthy eating and recipes, and really pushing for a healthy lifestyle from so many, you know, outside influences, whether it be alcohol, whether it be drugs, or whatever, you know, people do to themselves that are unhealthy. I just think it's going to be about building the community and having them come forward as one and all be willing to go into this healthy lifestyle, to realize that when the community is healthy, the tribe is healthy and much more successful. I mean, I think originally when casinos were developed, it was really so that it was a major employment, you know, center for tribal members and area community members. And, you know, if people are, you know, are unhealthy in the community, they're going to fall into places where, okay, we're not going to work, or we're not going to do this, or, and that's where it's going to say, okay, well, this casino is here to help the community, to help the tribe, and to flourish the communities even surrounding the tribe. And so I really think if the, you know, tribal nations want to move forward and have successful adults moving forward and families, you need to instill the, you know, the healthy lifestyle, and then, you know, hopefully that leads into the education and the importance of jobs and technical skills, you know, that are not just key to their future, but key to the tribal future as well. I mean, we need to have young, successful people ready to step into roles when leadership roles open, you know, or mentoring roles open. And I think that's going to be really important moving forward to kind of bridge some of these gaps that people are, you know, some people have witnessed in, you know, in tribal nations, to really bring the youth forward,
right,
and really grasp that healthy lifestyle, whether it be, you know, emotional, you know, or whatnot. It needs to move forward.
Yeah, that is a very, very important. How do you connect with your community? What are the kind of, because I remember we talked about that also when we got together, and that's what fascinated me also about you, is the importance that you stressed about connecting with your community, because ultimately they're the ones that are coming to your casino. Explain that to us a little bit.
Well, one, we have a lot of different pieces that the casino participates in, you know, and like we said, like I think I was explaining to you when we were out in Vegas, is we do rely on our local people within, say, 60 miles of the property all winter. And like I just said to you, you know, right before the call started, we got a foot of snow. I mean, a week ago, people are not coming from hundreds of miles away to drive into a foot of snow to come to your casino. So you really do depend on your local markets. So when we look at that, we have to support the Lac des Flambeaux community, but we also have to support the surrounding communities and, say, tri-county area of where our property is located. So we do a lot of community events. I mean, we donate gift certificates to, you know, charitable raffles. We have our Carry the Torch event that is held every year that has four charities that we're part of. You start to think, okay, what else could we do for our community? And we're like, okay, it's winter, and it happens, you know, my mom is one of the school nurses here in Lac des Flambeaux, and she said, oh my goodness, I wish I had a pair of gloves for every child, okay? And I would say, why don't we do that? Let's do it. So we started the Warm Up to Winning promotion, and,
that's,
you know,
great.
Our guests
I love
in,
that.
Yeah, our guests bring in hats and gloves, and they get $10 free play. So we've done it now for 3 or 4 years, and every year we have over 1,000 hats and gloves that we take to the Lac des Flambeaux grade school. And every kid has a hat and glove or more if they lose one, you know. So it's all about someone's, and I always tell people, if you have an idea, you have to tell, you know, me or the marketing department or somebody, because that, it can be such a simple conversation of, I wish every kid, I could buy every kid this. It's like, let's do it. You know, so it's that's the key of, like, everybody's ideas help, you know. And so when we look at our community, so like this last couple of years for our Carry the Torch event, we did a run walk trying to lead into that healthier lifestyle. You know, so we really stay connected with a lot, you know, whether it's the, you know, the food, local food pantry, or the local group collecting backpacks for kids, or, you know, the hats and gloves. All of these things add up to huge parts of helping your community. And it's not always monetary. I mean, we have so many staff at our property that volunteer for different types of events. I mean, we have some of our staff are EMTs that we, you know, can leave as needed. Or we have people that are in the National Guard. We have people on the fire department. We have, you know, Girl Scout leaders. And, you know, all of these different types of things. And our guests get to know our staff as, okay, yes, they're a slot attendant, but they're also my kid's baseball coach. Or, you know, so it's, I think a lot of our guests are intrigued that we're real people working in these jobs at the casino, and we're not only helping as a casino, but our employees in general are such great people that they're all involved in all of these outside, you know, things outside of their job, and people know that. And so I just think it goes a long way in the community to foster, you know, you're fostering good relationships with our guests and just, you know, in the neighboring communities. And a lot of those people are part of other organizations or, you know, owners of a bank or owners of the, and then you say, okay, wow, we're great community partners. And it's all about helping each other. So it's just a really, you know, kind of almost a warming atmosphere when you really think about all of the staff here and the ways that they help out their local community or just the community in general. And I think that's something that sometimes people miss is, okay, we're here to do business. We don't talk about personal. We don't do this. And I think there's a balance. Because when our staff are able to tell somebody, oh, tonight I get to coach the, you know, the kids' football team. Well, you know what? That person at the gaming machine might be a retired football coach, and now all of a sudden you have this connection. So
there's a distinction, and I think what you're saying is you put that there's a customer service, but there's also the community service, which you seem to have meshed together, right?
I believe so. I think that our staff has done a really great job kind of meshing that all together and doing it the right way, where it's not offensive, it's not putting things out there falsely or bragging or anything like that. I just think we have genuine, we have really genuine employees. But it starts from, you know, the top too. We have people in, you know, leadership positions here that have that same value of family and work and respecting everybody that works, you know, with them, and not only, you know, like I said, not beneath them, but with them, and respecting someone that's maybe, you know, vacuuming or cleaning the floor or doing other jobs, and being respectful to everybody. So I think it's a culture we have here.
Yeah, that's great. Great stuff. All right. So let's take some questions, and I'm going to go on here. Hello, this is GT Radio. Do you have a question for Leanna?
Yes. Hi, Tino and Leanna. It's Rich. How are you?
Good.
Good.
My question is the following. What do you think the strategy will be going forward to getting millennials to the gaming properties?
I think that is... If everybody had the answer to that, we would all be doing phenomenal. It's a really complex situation where I see a lot of millennials kind of changing their focus of they want to travel, they want to go, but they want options. They want so many options. And so I think when resorts and casinos, they have to have enough options where they can do multiple things there in one stay. We're not going to get the millennials to come and stay in a hotel and then just, oh, we have the gaming floor. That's not going to be good enough for the millennials. You have to have, you know, multiple other revenue-generating areas within your property that keep them occupied. And so that's where I think the transition is going to happen, to have them come to your property, because it's going to be where, okay, maybe one of them wants to game more, but the other person wants, you know, to do other things. So I think that's where
Leanna,
it's going to become different.
Leanna, you said something, you keep them occupied. What do you mean by that?
I believe that millennials, they're on the go. They have a social life that is, they are looking at Snapchat and they're posting to Instagram. And then they'll go do their job for a couple hours, but they are on the go, and they want everything done quickly. And so that's why I think that they will lose their focus in saying, well, they don't have anything there. They have just the resort or the casino. And that's why I think they just want everything right and available to them. And that's kind of what happened with the internet, I feel. You can find anything you want, or what time is something open, you can buy anything you want, you do whatever you want on the internet, and it happens now. And so they're not used to waiting for anything, and they're always busy. There's no downtime.
So you're saying that the frequency of information that's coming towards them is so great that when they come into the casino, they want to continue that, right?
Yeah, and that's where I think, okay, they might get bored with gaming after a little bit, you know, or that's going to have to evolve even more to keep their interest. There has to be more things evolving. You're not going to have the three real, you know, one-line slots anymore, because that's not going to work, you know, for the millennials. They need more. And so if we can't keep them engaged on the gaming floor, we have to have other things. Are we connected to a shopping mall? Do we have a spa there? We have multiple dining options for them. Some stuff they can grab really quick. They might not want to sit down and do the whole restaurant experience. They just want their food and go. That's where I think they're at, you know, whether it's a spa or the shopping or other things, other games, you know, like we're on the lake, can we have, you know, horseshoes or volleyball or whatever? Can we have other things to keep them occupied, a bonfire pit? I see a big transition. So what keeps people occupied? What's a pastime? And that's where I think, you know, some of the casinos are going to have to change their landscape a little bit.
Right. Rich, did you have another question?
No, I mean, she kind of touched on my second, was that, you know, I mean, you know, what are tribes doing to diversify, you know, so not putting all their eggs in one basket in terms of, you know, revenue coming from the casino solely. So, you know, you touched on entertainment and restaurants. I mean, is there something else that, you know, is kind of a hot topic right now?
Well, I think it's just not brick and mortar casino anymore. I know a lot of some jurisdictions have the online gaming now, and I'm very interested in the aspect of the online gaming. I want to continue to follow the you know, all the articles on it and kind of the revolution of that, because I think that's going to be a key piece to tribes moving forward. Is I really do feel that online gaming is going to be a large source of their revenue. And you know, I know that some tribes have diversified to some aspect and found successful businesses. I just don't know that they've been as large, you know, as large revenue generating as a casino has. And so I think it's important for the tribes to have multiple areas that generate revenue. And, you know, for us, when we're in a tourism area, it's important for us to have other areas, especially during the winter months. And so
sure.
I can see that, you know, it's going to be – it's still always important for tribes, but I do think it's going to – over the next – whether it's 10 or 15, I think it could even be 5 years. I mean, things have been moving so quickly that I see online gaming turning into the next piece for tribes.
Right. The next revenue generator.
Right. Yeah.
Is that what you're saying,
Ian? I absolutely believe so. I mean, it starts kind of with your play for fun social gaming that, you know, you kind of want to break into the market with. And we've kind of done that here. We have an app, and people can play the games. They can buy tips, play for free. But what if we were able to offer that where people could now play at their time? And that's kind of where it goes back to the millennials a little bit, is they can play right on their device. They don't have to walk into the brick-and-mortar casino and take their time out to drive here, to walk in, to sit. They could be playing their game on their device or their iPhone and then be doing something else as well. So I'm closely watching the online gaming industry, and I'm intrigued by it. I think if the tribes aren't staying up to date and following that, there could be some tribes that aren't ready for it when it does happen. And I think it will happen eventually. But if you're not ready, I think you're going to be left in the dust.
Great stuff. Great questions, Rich. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
All right.
Thanks.
Yep. Let's go to our next question here. Hello. This is GT Radio. Do you have a question for Liana?
I do, yes. What are some of the things that you have worked on that have given you the most satisfaction?
Boy, it's been a lot of years here. And there's so many stories. I do think one thing I'm really proud of is I'll mention maybe a couple. It's so hard to pick one. I'm really happy about transitioning our advertising agency and hiring. I have hired tribal members and done a lot of training with them to really grow within the organization. And when I have, a full advertising agency working for the casino that's, 80 to 90% all tribal members are tribal descendants, I think that says a lot. Some of these positions are very technical. Some of these people have put a lot of effort and will into getting trained. And I'm proud of that. I am proud that we can have a skilled team of tribal members and tribal descendants that are really working hard for the casino because they know what's at stake. They have a piece in this. They know if the casino is successful, the tribe is successful, and their whole community benefits. And so I'm proud of the fact that we've been able to do a lot of training in our department and have a lot of tribal members working, with me and this team. And so that's one piece, and I don't think a lot of people would probably, want to, even go into that route. But the other piece, another piece that I look at is the promotional planning. And, when you have a promotion and you've maybe, I've had a couple summer promotions that we have ran. They've been extremely successful for us. Our marketing team came up with all these concepts and then implemented them and had the promotions, held the promotions. You get your revenue, you get your P&Ls and you're like, oh, my gosh, it was a great month. And then you see another huge property, maybe 3 or 4 times bigger than you, and they just copied your promotion. You're like, we did it. you're like, we're a little casino in northern Wisconsin, or mid-sized casino in northern Wisconsin. You just had a major, city casino steal your promotion. That's kind of rewarding. We laugh about it and say, okay, but then you're like, we're moving on. We got to plan the next one.
Perfect.
Yeah. Did you have another question?
I do. It kind of ties in with the to the second question I had. What are some of the things that distinguishes your casino from your competition?
Well, I think it's an interesting landscape in Wisconsin, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with all the Wisconsin casinos, but we have some other smaller casinos closer to us, but they're not quite the full resort casino like we are. So we consider some of our closest competitors, even though they're technically, a little bit further away. We've had a lot of development in Wisconsin with new casinos. We have another new resort casino that will be one of our main competitors. And I think we've been able to successfully implement our host program and build on that team. We just currently did a restructure again this last year to really, even add more positions and, change positions to help, really – meet the guest needs. And so we've been able to implement that host, the host department, and provide a really great player development team to, help our guests, to provide them their offers. And that's something our competitors have not been able to quite, mirror exactly what we're doing with that. So I won't tell you all the secrets, but I think that's been a key to our success over the last few years.
That's great. All right. Thank you so much. Go to the next question. Some good questions tonight. Really good. Hang on a sec. Hello, hello. This is GT Radio. Do you have a question for Liana?
Hi. Liana.
Hello.
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hello? All right, good. I feel like I know you, Liana.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. So here's the question. what do you think are the next the top challenges and opportunities that you see facing gaming in the next, like, say, 5 to 10 years?
I think in Wisconsin gaming first, and then I'll talk nationally in a second. I think in Wisconsin gaming, it's going to be the competition. And I mean brick-and-mortar competition of other properties building. I mean, we go back to the piece of the pie of gaming, and we look at how many properties there were 10 years ago compared to how many properties there are now without the growing population. So we're all fighting for this same population, but now there's more people fighting for the guests. Of, you know, and so I really think the expansion of gaming in Wisconsin is going to be the toughest hurdle, because we don't have the population rising. And, you know, and so I really think it's going to be key of where do people want to go, where are they treated the best, where are their offers the best, and where do they feel comfortable. I mean, and that's what it's really going to come down to, is the guest experience, because there are a lot of gaming options now in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even to add on, like I said, with nationally, I do think that social gaming is affecting some of the national slot machine numbers. I also think that over the next, you know, whether it's sports betting or FanDuel or all, you know, all of these different sites that are coming out, people, especially the younger generation, have the opportunity to spend their money on other forms of, we can call it gaming, but other forms of entertainment via their cell phone, via their computer, whatnot, and use those dollars for entertainment, but they're not necessarily gaming. And so, you know, for example, I know my teenager wanted to buy, like, shields on some video game, and I'm like, wait, what? What does it get you? And he's like, shields,
right.
I need shields. I'm moving on in this game, and, you know, you need $2 or what, and it keeps, you know. So that's where I see some of the younger generation purchasing and using their entertainment dollars. But I think it's going to hurt the gaming industry, because it may not be their top pick of their entertainment. So I think it will be interesting to see. I mean, it's always an evolution, and I think the gaming industry has done a pretty good job keeping up with the changing evolution over the years. And it will just be one more hurdle to overcome.
Right.
Did you have another question?
No, that's great. You kind of answered some of the other thoughts that I had when you were responding to that. Okay,
okay.
Great. Thanks, Leanna.
That's great. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay. Great questions. Hello, hello. Welcome to GT Radio. Do you have any questions for Leanna?
Hi, Leanna. Great show so far. You had touched a little bit earlier on how much you like teaching. I wanted to see if you could give us a little bit more background on maybe of who your mentors were along the way, both, you know, in the gaming and maybe in life, and then, you know, how you're maybe some more information on how you're kind of paying it forward to the community and to employees.
Sure. That's a great question. I'm surprised we didn't dive into that too much. There's just so many things you could, you know, directions we could go. But when I look at mentors, it first started at home. Both of my parents held jobs. Like I said, my mom's a school nurse. My dad is, you know, minister and director of planning for the tribe. And so I've always been instilled with some really great work ethic where, you know, I was really never given anything. So when you look at it, like, okay, well, your parents have, you know, pretty good jobs, but they're not giving you anything. You have to work for it. And I think that goes a long way, as a lot of kids feel entitled these days. They're just getting things, but they didn't know they had to work for them. And so that's where I feel I had a pretty solid foundation at home, which I was, you know, really, really grateful for. And my mom actually always told me, always be able to support yourself. Don't count on anybody else. Pave your own way. And she's a very strong female, and always had, you know, she always encouraged me and had, she always had said, just make sure you can take care of yourself. And so I thought about that growing up, and there are times of saying, well, you know, I'm really working a lot. Is it worth it or whatnot? But I think the piece to be a successful woman in business is to have somebody at home supporting you. So maybe not such a mentor, but someone that's supporting me. I mean, you know, my husband goes to, I mean, I think, you know, tonight he's running a child to some event, or he's running our daughter to dance. And, you know, while I'm working an entertainment event, he's going to, you know, a football game or doing different things. So he helps out so much where there would never be possible for me to have a position as such as director of marketing and balance. You know, we have three children. So he helps out and, you know, doesn't complain about it, doesn't, I work long hours, you know, like today I'm going on 12 hours. That's fine. It just is what it is, and that's okay. And so to have someone supportive of you at home and helping you with things, I mean, I'm sure he wouldn't like, but he cooks and helps with laundry and does all those things too, you know. So I it's just really helpful. And so I wouldn't call it a mentor, but it's a key support system for you to really be able to do the best job you can at work and not be worrying about all these other things. You know, who ran school snack to our daughter today? Oh, he took care of it, you know.
Right.
But when I go back into work mentors, I would say, and maybe she's listening, I did send her the link, but our controller here, Karen, she's been in the business a very long time. I know she's worked in her position here for 20-some years. I'm not even sure. She was here when I started working 16 years ago. And she's been an extremely encouraging person to me. She's has a very strong personality, which sometimes we kind of, I sometimes don't speak as strong as her, and we kind of balance it out, and it works out. But I've watched her, how she communicates in meetings, how she deals with, you know, different situations that are challenging, and I have learned a lot just, you know, observing people or not being afraid to ask people, like, you know, letting them know, I have this situation going on. What would you do? And I don't see it as a sign of weakness to ask somebody that. I'm completely okay with it. And it just helps you get either confirm what you originally thought, or maybe it guides you another direction. So, and I think everyone has different mentors, and I think it's interesting that mine have been female, with my mom, and also, you know, with our couple of people that I work with. But it's definitely helps along the way.
Yep. Did you have another question?
It's kind of along the same lines of, you mentioned people feeling entitled. What's your message to the new generation, or maybe the current generation, that's not taking advantage of the opportunities that Indian gaming provides, whether it's education or jobs? And, what is their responsibility in the current generation or older generation to help the next generation take advantage of these opportunities?
I think there definitely is. And, you know, I kind of mentioned before, when you go to college, I don't think anybody in the gaming industry ever thinks that, right now, how did I get here? And it was never really the expected position they thought they would hold. They thought they would be at a bank, or they thought they'd be like, I thought I'd be a teacher or whatever. And so everyone just kind of fell into the gaming industry in their own unique way. But I think it's important that as a community here, we need to say, hey, who's going to work in this position next? Is somebody trained? And I do think that it's the responsibility of the current leadership to start finding people that even work for you in other areas. So like other areas of marketing, and say, hey, this person is really excelling in this. Or if this person could learn these skills, they could move up to the next position. Maybe they could be could they be a host now, or could they move up to an executive host someday, or could they, I just think there's a lot to be said about taking your current employees, and maybe it's not their job duty, but saying, hey, do you want to work over here tonight and try to see if that's something you might like? And, we've taken people that would, work at CoatCheck, and they're so great at customer service, and said, hey, why don't you let's move over to the host. You're just doing phenomenal. You're good with the guests. And I think it's the job of not only working with your current staff, it's our responsibility to help them grow. but also into the community. I know here at the casino we have a recruiter. We go to a lot of, you know, he goes to a lot of events and getting the word out about here's all the jobs that we can provide. I mean, we have three shifts. We have, we can work, you know, every day. We have a great benefit package at, you know, and a lot of tribal casinos have that great benefit package. And I think it's our job to educate area community members that these opportunities are here. So I see a lot of people want to graduate college and move to a city or move, you know, away from the reservation for whatever reason. And I think it's important to for people to know that these opportunities are here.
That's great. Great answer.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your questions. Wow, some great questions. Well, Leanna, as always, love talking to you. Great stories, great motivation, great inspiration, and you're just a wonderful person. Thanks for so much for being on the show, and I hope to have you on again, actually.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I'm sure I'll see you out in Vegas again.
Another conference, more stories. We promise, okay? Promise you'll tell me more stuff. I love it when I sit down with you. It's always an event. All right, I'll talk to you
all
soon.
Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Wow, what a great interview. Just had such a great time. So that concludes another episode of GT Radio, Conversations with Tino. So February 8th, I have a great friend, a really, really amazing character, Roy Corby, who's the GM of casino operations at Sandia Resort and Casino in New Mexico. And he's been a friend for a while. You're going to love this guy. He's got so much enthusiasm, and he knows so much about the biz. Don't forget to tune in. And remember, everybody's got a story. You just need time to listen to what they have to say. Have a good night, and God bless.